Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breeze.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the Bubba Show, or it's the Kevin Kelly Show, and we're bringing in Recon Capital's Kevin Kelly, star, Bloomberg, Fox, Mornings with Maria. He's all over the place. Kevin Kelly, welcome aboard. What's going on, brother?
Thanks for having me on. I'm honored to be here with the one and only Bubba.
He's honored, except I could never find him. I had to track him down. I had to threaten him on Twitter to get him coming. No. Anyways, it's great to have you, and I do like watching you, and you got a pretty good feel for what's going on. And, of course, you and I have our own little disagreements. But tell us about Recon Capital first, and give us a little background of the Arizona State Wildcat, Sun Devil, who is from Scottsdale, ended up in Manhattan. How'd you do that?
Yeah, so basically, I was really, really fixated on markets from a young age. And so when I went off to college, I actually found a regional investment bank in Arizona that would sponsor me and let me get my licenses and actually work there part time during the school year and in the summers. So it was great. They took a chance on me, and I got my Series 7 and 63 at the age of 19. And then I was just off to the races. I couldn't get enough of the markets, because every day, being a competitive guy, every day you got a score sheet, and the game is always changing, and there's so much action and activity. So from there, I graduated from ASU. Go Devils. I'm glad you fixed that, because the Wildcats are so I don't want to be associated with that.
Understood.
There are some talented people that went there. I think Woody Johnson actually went to U of A, which is pretty fascinating, the Johnson & Johnson empire. But from there, I then went off and worked for Deutsche Bank and Goldman Sachs. So I got the inside, with the big firms. After that, I left and founded Recon Capital. And the whole premise is that there wasn't a whole lot of firms out there that were focused on really providing institutions with some solid options, strategies, and coverage that they needed. There's kind of you've got the big guys who provide it, and then there are some really small guys, and then in between there was a little bit of a disparage for family offices that needed to implement some strategies on single stocks, to just figuring out how to navigate the overall volatility market, because it's always changing as well. So we were able to get some family offices, some big institutional investors who really needed sort of some guidance in different ways to look at volatility. So that's what Recon Capital really focuses on. We sub-advise for a closed-end fund called EGIF is the ticker. It's the Eagle Growth and Income Fund. And so Eagle is owned by Raymond James. So what's nice is that they select the securities, and then we have a really formulaic option strategy to generate additional income. So what's nice about options and what we think one of their biggest benefits is you can actually change the risk reward of equities into a non-correlated asset, which is beneficial, especially in a rising interest rate environment where some people are worried about their fixed income and exposure. So we sub-advise there. We sub-advise for some other institutional investors on the private side, on separately managed accounts. And that's kind of what we really focus on. We focus on utilizing the tools that are out there, and that's the option market to help espouse our market views.
Well, that's a pretty big mouthful. Now, obviously, we can't talk any direct strategy. I mean, we can talk strategy. We just can't talk any specific trades, because you are licensed, so you can't just come here spouting off on what's going on. We can't talk markets. And do you guys use anything other than options? Use futures at all, or just strictly using your options to cut off and hedge out volatility and do things like that?
Yeah, there's I think one of the biggest tools that investors are using these days are ETFs, and it's pretty fascinating because I think an ETF is actually just another derivative, right? I mean, it is literally just a piece of paper, a certificate saying that you have claim of ownership over a basket of securities at a custodian. So we utilize the ETF market to trade around a lot of things and hedge ourselves or go long or, you know, really kind of move around for what we need to do for portfolios.
So when you're looking at different strategies now, you know, are you specifically trying to hedge a specific position, or do you guys look to put on positions through the option model first?
That's a great question, and it really depends on a client-by-client basis and what we're looking to do. So it's so hard because certain clients, options are used by investors and speculators, right? So it depends on which way we're trying to go. And that's the beautiful part, because some people may have a portfolio and they've got a position and they want to hedge it. And some people may not have a position, but they want to get exposure to that and they may want to speculate on it. So what we're always doing is we're always looking at the different scenarios, especially because the great part about options is that you can use them for any asset class. So whether it being in the oil markets or you're in the fixed income markets or even on real estate. So that's the beauty of options, because we can go across different asset classes. That's why you have to be sort of a generalist and jack of all trades to really understand how to implement and use the options to your benefit across the various asset classes.
So when, you know, obviously we've had it's been a fairly rough year from a volatility standpoint, obviously, because we as options traders depend on volatility to make things happen. You know, how is it affecting you guys at all? I mean, again, you know, there's, if you're using certain strategies, it's not as much of an effect, but you do miss the opportunity of some major movement. And sometimes you can capitalize more than once when there's a more volatile market. What are you thinking there?
Yeah. So, you know, it has been perplexing over the last year or so to see how VIX itself has been lower, you know, than its historical averages, significantly lower. But what we do is we look at the different types of volatility. So we can look at the VXN, which is the NASDAQ 100, which actually has recently blown out to a higher spread than in March. Where here's an interesting aspect when we look at it. In March, the VXN, the NASDAQ 100 volatility, was lower than that of the S&P 500. Now, that's pretty telling and significant when you think about it. And what is that signaling to you? Well, one thing is that the S&P 500 has defensive sectors in it, and the NASDAQ 100 has cyclical sectors. So is that a time to hedge yourself out even further, because there might be a tech sell-off, given that now the cyclicals are actually lower volatility than some of the defensives? So it's pretty interesting when we look at what's happening, and we're actually able to capitalize off of that, because you can also look at 3-month volatility. You can look at Russell 2000 volatility, which trades at a premium. So there's ways to really look into the market and capture different spreads or different premiums that are out there that aren't as followed or viewed, because right, VIX is just a headline number, but there's so many different areas of VIX, especially when you look at the sector level. So you could see utilities at different points this year had an implied volatility of over 18. Now, do you want to sell vol at an 18 on a defensive sector? Maybe. So it's interesting to look at the different areas, especially sector-wise, when it comes to volatility.
And that will bring us to the end of this first segment. This is Kevin Kelly from Recon Capital, Arizona State Sun Devil, and man about town in New York, but also appears on Bloomberg doing options trades and obviously with mornings with Maria. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz. When you miss a show, you go to libertytalk.fm and you can download the show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends with Xander hosting. And of course, BubbaTrading.com gets you Bubba's Bottom Line, which is a video we do once a week to looking to win an Emmy for some podcasting. But in the meantime, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with more from Kevin Kelly after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Maggie, Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Kevin Kelly from Recon Capital. And of course, you see him on Bloomberg. You see him on Fox. He does a lot of mornings when we read. He does After the Bell. He's just all about and always likes to argue with me. So it's perfect. We got a great thing going here. So, Kevin, you know, you and I have a little bit of disagreement on where markets go. And I know I said you can't give me specific directions, but what do you think of the markets or what's your thought and what do you expect going forward here?
Yeah, the markets are pretty interesting right now, and I think a lot of people are missing the overall point of what's happening and with low volatility, trading at historical premiums, and kind of all the fervor that's out there. And I think it's important to note that these markets right now are in an unprecedented area, and that's because of a lot of the monetary policy that has happened. Never before have we had programs like quantitative easing, right, where you had the Federal Reserve come in and artificially manipulate markets, right, to suppress interest rates down. So if you look at overall markets, what does that tell you? You've got to think about holistically earnings in that regard. Are earnings worth more in a low interest rate environment? Some people do believe so, and that's because when you look at the weighted average cost of capital, you know, you can see that equity is worth more than debt, especially in a lower interest rate environment. So some people believe, hey, even though we're trading at, you know, the upper quartiles of historical premiums on valuations, you know, it's due for that. And that's because the Fed has also signaled we're in a lower for longer environment. I mean, Janet Yellen just spoke this week, and it doesn't seem like we're going to get anywhere near the historical levels on short-term interest rates anytime soon. So I think that's why you can see people are comfortable with a risk-on environment, especially because, I mean, you've got some solid dividends out there where companies are like, hey, we'll buy back our stock because we can borrow so cheaply and then retire that expensive equity so the earnings are worth more. So I think it's a pretty interesting area. And, you know, I think another aspect that's interesting that people are kind of focused on is the correlations, right? So you look at sector correlations, you look at asset correlations. Because you have a low interest rate environment, you can, and people are starting to trade in the same baskets of securities, you're starting to see correlations go to one now, or, you know, in the 95% range, because we can look at the technology sector. Over the entire year, the market has traded in 93% correlation with the tech sector. That's pretty telling as well. So if tech sells off, does the entire market sell off? So people need to be very conscientious of where they're getting their exposures and what to do when those exposures break down.
Does this low complacent environment have any, does it add any fear to you as a guy who knows the markets pretty well and knows that these complacent markets and the new markets we're hearing now and that this time is different kind of markets, does that scare you at all?
You know, it doesn't scare me at all because every day I got to wake up and I got to participate in the market I'm given, right? So I'm trying to process as much information and as many signals as I can and make sure I'm not overextended or I have an exit plan, right? So the hardest thing about a trade is getting out of it, not getting into it. And what do you do? And also, what do you do when your thesis doesn't work out? Because the markets can move pretty fast. And we've seen that, especially when it comes to volatility, it's very episodic. We go back to 2015 in August, we hit the low on the year around VIX with a 10 handle. Fast forward 20 days, August 24th, the VIX broke for a half hour when it broke above 50. On the 50 level on August 24th, and that's pretty telling when you have the low for the year and then the high for the year and the VIX actually broke and they couldn't calculate and disseminate that information. What do you do in those types of environments? So I'm not worried because I'm very conscientious of the past because it doesn't repeat, but it certainly does rhyme. So things that I look at is what's happening in oil, right? We know Saudi Arabia is trying to come out with an IPO for Aramco next year. It's very important for them. We've seen low oil prices. They're trying to get OPEC to cut production to boost the price of oil. They've gotten a reprieve because the dollar has gotten lower in the first half of this year because their currency is pegged to the dollar. But what happens if the dollar gets stronger and oil goes lower? Will they devalue their currency? Will that have the same type of effect of August 2015 when the Chinese devalued their currency, the yuan, and then we got that episodic volatility? So I'm always trying to think about what can happen and am I prepared for that? So I'm not worried about this. I love these markets. I think there's plenty of opportunities. You just got to find the best ways to espouse your market view.
So you prefer a high volatility environment or a low volatility environment?
You know, I actually prefer a high volatility environment just because I'm an action junkie, but I will never complain about a low volatility environment because you've just got to switch the way you trade, right? So if you think about it, some people will say they like covered calls, right? So they want to sell and generate. Well, maybe an equivalent position to do in a low volatility environment in order to not reduce your upside, you can just sell puts on names, right? That you already have if you're using them as collateral. So you switch the type of strategies you use. I mean, I think everybody likes a high vol environment because there's so many opportunities and they're so prevalent, right? But in a low volatility environment, there's just as many opportunities out there.
Well, that's true, but obviously the money is smaller when they're moving, and the opportunity right. to be wrong on a trade is a lot less. You have to be a lot better on a low volatility market because again the markets creep lower, your positions decay away, and there's really no action. So that is one of the things that you have to be very careful in selection when you're trading. But when you're using strategies, like what are some of your favorite strategies to use?
Yeah, because going back to the low volatility environment, there are ways to deploy, whether it's call spreads or calendars or even put spreads. And because vol is so cheap, you can use those to your advantage. They can be cheaper and you can get the spreads that you want. And it just depends too, because I think investors are really hesitant. They're more hesitant in a low vol environment, so you can actually capitalize on that, right? There's less hesitation, I think, in a high vol environment because people are executing the cycle of money, people are trading, they're going around it. So you can capitalize on that hesitancy as well as, you know, it's funny because you could do strangles, you could do straddles because of how cheap vol is. So you can, when I go back to talking about how episodic things are, so if vol is really low and you want to do a straddle or a strangle, right? If you're anticipating an episodic move one way or the other, why wouldn't you deploy that strategy? And then you can really capitalize off of that.
So you don't mind, you know, paying the premium. If you buy a straddle, obviously you're playing with inside the expected move. And if you don't get the move, you've really just bought a stock at a certain price that if you don't get the activity, doesn't it just collapse?
Yeah, it does. But that's if what you want, right? So there are certain things out there where when you're looking at implied vol versus historical vol and looking at the recent volatility over the certain earnings cycles, so you can see a lot of times that you're having a disparage between one earnings cycle and the next one. And the market does have a lot of seasonality when it comes to certain names. So that's the beauty of it, right? I mean, if you know certain names and you're very comfortable with them and you know, they've already managed expectations, but the vol is lower or higher than you expect, you can play off of that and use certain strategies to your advantage. Because like I said, a lot of people are just trading in baskets, right? So if people are trading in baskets of ETFs, there's certain underlying names that you can trade off of because people aren't really focused on that specific name. They're focused on the sector. So it really depends on what you're trying to do.
And this is Kevin Kelly, Recon Capital. This is The Bubba Show. We'll be right back. And, of course, we are being brought to you today by Audible Books. And it's audiobooks.com. They've got over 180,000 titles. And, of course, go check them out at audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. Again, that's audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. We're going to stop out here for a break. Be back with more from Kevin Kelly on The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Kevin Kelly from Recon Capital, also the star on Mornings with Maria and on Fox and on Bloomberg all the time, giving options trades. All right, so Kevin, you know, we had some bank earnings on Friday, and of course, they were kind of mixed. I mean, JP Morgan was better than expected, but the stock did sell off a little bit. You know, I think that it was obviously already priced in, and I think the market's kind of overpriced what they really expected. What do you think about expectations versus actual announcements?
You know, you're starting to see managements are becoming very good at managing expectations, especially of the biggest banks, right? So it's no surprise that trading volume was pretty low, and we really expected that. It's no surprise that these banks are not doing well on the net interest margin side, given the low interest rate environment. I think over the past few years, you've seen top managements really manage expectations coming into quarters as well as on their conference calls. So I think it's pretty interesting when you see a stock sell off because of, you know, certain levels that they've already managed a lot of expectations. And I think that has to do with people were overestimating. And so I think that's another opportunity for people when names move too far too fast and the information is already out there. Who's surprised on certain names that they didn't make trading volume, that they didn't, that their net interest margins down, even though they're lending more. So I think it's pretty good when you have these sell-offs really managing and checking investors, because these big names that everybody has exposure to, especially on the big institutional investor side. So it's nice to get a nice little tick up of volatility, but I think investors really, really need to focus on the next year, 3 years, 5 years when they're getting into particular names and what their expectations are. So do I expect the S&P 500, let's say broadly, to go up for the next 3 years at a 10% clip? Probably not. Then how do I trade in and out and certain my names, certain names? Do I want exposure to certain sectors? And so managements are going to tell you what they think, and banks are one especially. They're talking about we need infrastructure, we need rates to go up, we need fiscal policy. So focus on the sectors and which ones can play out over the next 3 to 5 years, because we are getting late in the business cycle.
So, but not now. This on one point, markets do go up 9% year over year, just not every year. But of course, you know, right. Obviously, I think this is an important thing to look at is you know, I'm an investor and I'm a trader. As an investor, I don't sell stocks. I use my options model to hedge them, and I never sell. As a trader, you know, right now I'm more leaning towards the negative side. I think that, you know, all this complacency and everything that's going on is problematic. But I do think that the big key is, I think many people make the mistake and they confuse which strategy that they're trading, that they're in. And we cannot confuse investing with trading because they're two completely separate different animals, as you kind of just pointed out, that markets, you know, they will go up eventually. And if you're playing the right names or if you're hedging yourself, you can stay in. But if you're trading, you trade with a little different style. Is that not correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, people need to look at their time frames and horizons, because if we go back to December, tech sold off as a sector pretty significantly, right? And that had to do with a new administration. But why were people selling that, given that these are names that tend to be growing and they're cheap on a growth at a reasonable price? So if you look at GARP, right, so their earnings are growing top line and bottom line. And so when you look at their PEG ratio, right, the price to earnings growth, they're cheaper than some of the other aspects of the market. And then you can see that performance played out in the first and second quarter. So investors, you're hitting the nail on the head. You should own stocks or own baskets of securities, whether it's ETFs or however you're doing it, and then use options to play around those strategies to really hedge yourself out, because you don't want to miss out. If we go back to 1998, right? If you sold in 1998 because of complacency in the tech boom, you would have missed out on a couple great years, right? That are pivotal to your investment returns. So think of it in that type of regard too, because if you're so scared and you sell and then you miss out on up moves, but then you get back in and you get all the downside. I mean, there's different ways to look at it, but you've got to figure out your time horizon and your appetite. So people that sold in December because they were worried about tech because of the new administration missed out, right? Because they were like, oh, this administration is adversarial and he's going to exact his revenge. Well, the exact opposite happened.
Right. And let's talk about that for a minute. You know, I believe that everything has been priced into the market, that they're going to get these things done. What is your opinion, and what is your opinion of the administration?
So I've seen time and time again in this market where I'm like, it's priced in. Everybody knows they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And then you see headlines come out and the market moves one way or another, bad or good, depending on the headline. And every time I think it's priced in the market, it's not, right? It tends to be discounted. So I think one of the biggest catalysts behind this market, and that's why you haven't seen a 5% sell-off in well over a year, is because this market thinks there's going to be tax reform that's going to happen, right? So people are waiting to sell on that news. I think there'll be an initial pop, and then people are like, we got tax reform, let's take a step back and see what the next leg higher is going to be. So it's kind of fascinating. I think this administration is actually doing a lot of things that they said they were going to do. There has been reform at the Veterans Administration, right? It's fascinating that that didn't happen before. So now it's a bipartisan issue. And it got done, and now there's actually accountability. So there's things happening in the background. I mean, there's a lot of headlines that are distracting people, and I think Jamie Dimon even commented on that as well. But I think there are major initiatives, and those take time, and I think that's going to be healthy for the market. Healthcare reform is a bipartisan issue. Tax reform is a bipartisan issue. This administration has both chambers in Congress, as well as the vast majority of governors. So they just need to be able to execute on those strategies, but it's going to take longer than people want. We're in an instantaneous gratification society, and especially in the market, when you look at quarter over quarter, these things take time. If they didn't get healthcare done and they got it done right next year, I would be happy. I was a little bummed that they started with it right out the gate. I wish they did temporary tax. So I feel like this administration is trying to get their footing, right? And I wish they started with temporary tax cuts to kickstart this economy and really start moving it forward, because we have had low GDP growth. But these things that they're doing are going to take time, and especially for it to trickle through into the hard economic numbers. So So I think there are great initiatives. It's a lot of bipartisan issues. These things are going to take time to play out through the market. I think S&P 500 names have already benefited. Now it's seeing how it's going to benefit with the Russell 2000, as well as small businesses, the private markets. But I think overall, You've got an administration, you've got a Congress, and you've got governors that are all on the same page, and they're trying to get bipartisan issues done.
And whether they intend on getting these issues done or not, that's another story. It's hard to say because of all the crapola that's going on in the swamp or in D.C. And you know, I have a lot of problem believing that they will actually get any of this crap done. But again, that's just my opinion. And I know Kevin's got a different opinion, but that is Kevin Kelly from Recon Capital, as seen on Fox and with Mornings with Maria on After the Bell with David Asman and Melissa Francis. And also you see him on Bloomberg doing options trades. But in the meantime, this show is being brought to you by Casper. Casper.com, and of course, great mattresses. And you should go check out CasperTrial.com/The Bubba Show, and get a free you get $50 off towards any mattress purchase, and they've got some great guarantees as well. So certainly, I urge you to go check out Casper.com and great mattresses. Everything going good, and that's again www.caspertrial.com/The Bubba Show. And in the meantime, also go check out Bubba's Bottom Line. You know, each and every week I do about 30 minutes or so of a little bit of a show and kind of talk about what's going on and what we expect and how all this stuff works. And, you know, obviously you get my personal take on how it is. And yeah, obviously it's the news and, you know, some facts and some opinion. And of course I do at the end of the show, I always do an opinion piece. So I urge you to go check that out. In the meantime, you know that LibertyTalk.fm is the station I use. And of course I think it can handle all of the news and information that you need. And I know one thing about us at Liberty, we give it to you straight. There isn't this BS cheerleading going on, but you can download the Bubba Show there every single day, or listen to it live at 2 to 3 Eastern time. So make sure you check that out as well. And, you know, you get, the Sporting Edge. And of course that's being handled by Xander right now, and they're doing a big job and doing some remotes and some other stuff like that. So you know, go there to LibertyTalk.fm and check all that out. And in the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break and come back with more from Kevin Kelly from Recon Capital and give us some more information on the way he views it. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, coming right back to you after the break.
1,000 beers in 28 years.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Kevin Kelly. That is Kevin Kelly from Recon Capital, also from Mornings with Maria. You see him all the time. You see him on Vine. You see him all over the place. He's plus Bloomberg. He does a lot of option stuff for them. So, Kevin, now the Fed had, you know, Janet Yellen had her Humphrey Hawkins testimony this week, and of course they were a little bit dovish, helping spur a little bit of rally in the markets. What I don't understand is when they indicated that they might start liquidating their bond position, that was to me almost like a backdoor rate increase, because if they do liquidate, it's going to send bond prices lower, which will send interest rates higher. Give me your thoughts on that, sir.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because by them actually winding down their balance sheet, that is a rate hike. That's exactly what's going to happen. Now, it will take time to play through into the markets. So when you start to think about when they initially did quantitative easing, rates actually went up. It was fascinating when they were trying to get them down. So it takes some time to trickle through into the actual system and into the markets, but it is equivalent to a rate hike. So we will see rates go higher. Now, this has been communicated pretty significantly over the past few quarters from the Fed, especially a lot of their governors that have gone out and talked across the country to their constituents. So it's telling that the bond market is actually doing fine in regards to that. We've seen basically no big movements. When we think about the taper tantrum that happened, bonds sold off, stocks sold off. There was no areas of refuge. You have the Fed now has communicated it for several quarters, and all is calm in the market. Everybody's expecting it. And so the issue would be, should they not start to wind down their balance sheet? Should they not raise interest rates? What does that say? It says the Fed is scared. They will. That's communicating that they think the economy is weaker than they anticipated. And I think there would be a sell-off then if we don't get them to unwind their balance sheet and raise one more time this year.
Now, you know, we've got, you know, the potential that, and nobody really talked about that part of the equation. The other part of the equation is you can talk about full employment all you want in the world, but at the end of the day, when tax receipts are lower and jobs stink and we don't really have growth and there really is no real growth on the horizon, how can we justify higher markets?
Yeah, I think you're bringing up some great points, especially when you look at the labor participation rate. It is extremely low. And one of the ways investors need to look at higher markets is that there tends to be a home bias, right? So if we look at the S&P 500 and we look at where revenues come from, it's not just the United States. These are large multinational corporations. That's why you see the spread in the volatility between the S&P 500 and the Russell 2000. The Russell 2000 all year has had a volatility level above 15, above 16, because that's smaller businesses that are more domestically based and get their revenues in dollars. When you look at the S&P 500, those are companies that have worldwide operations that are able to capitalize in the emerging markets. They're able to capitalize in the Asian Pacific region, as well as Europe. So they're really, really sophisticated, big, well-oiled machines that have global operations and get revenues not only here, but also abroad. So I can look at the markets, and you look at the tech sector, they get almost half of their revenues from overseas. So that's how you have to look at it. I can't look at the markets like, hey, what's happening here in the U.S.? I also have to look abroad, and we're seeing numbers, hard data numbers, get better in Europe. And so that has also lent credence to this market rally this year.
All right. So now when I look at the Fed and I look at the things they do, I'm not a very happy guy. I don't think that they've really stuck to the original mandate. I think they've gotten far too out of control, especially because even though they're a private corporation, they're really part of the government, right? We know they're private, or supposed to be, but there's a little bit too much things going on together that help each other. And at the end of the day, the only reason that they really want to have inflation is so they can inflate our assets so we can pay more taxes so they can get bailed out from the bailing out that they did. You have a comment on that?
Yeah, I've been highly critical of the Fed. I don't think they should have interfered in the free markets at all. What did they do? They actually went in to an open and free marketplace and artificially suppressed interest rates, right? And what that does is that basically is against capitalism and against free markets, because now you have capital not going to its highest and best uses. It's actually being distorted. So we don't know the knock-on effects and what that'll have, but we know the Fed has certainly recognized what they've done, because they've even commented in their minutes about asset inflation. And that's exactly what happened. So when you look at the quantitative easing programs that they've implemented, most of the market returns have been in the expansion of multiples, PE multiples, going from 13 to 15 to 18. You actually haven't seen it come through on the earnings side. We've actually just come out of an earnings recession, and that's because we've had terrible comparables, especially on the energy and financial side. So it's pretty telling that we've become completely dependent on the Fed. And that's what worries me, because 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we cannot be completely dependent on the Fed for market returns. That is not how this, how free markets and investors should be operating and depending on. So it's Fed put, I'm completely against it.
Kevin Kelly, Recon Capital, star on Mornings with Maria and After the Bell and Bloomberg. I appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Had a great time.
And that was our friend Kevin Kelly from Recon Capital, also seen on, as seen on TV now, Mornings with Maria, and also Bloomberg and some other. He's now developing not only a successful investing career, but a media career. And check him out. He's got a good opinion. Again, we don't agree necessarily on the way the markets are going to go yet, but certainly a very solid opinion. But he is, obviously, you can tell, extremely smart and understanding of the options model, which to me is very important because, again, at the end of the day, options are a great way to either enter positions or to create extra yield or to protect your portfolio. And, of course, you know that we right here at the Bubba Show, actually BubbaTrading.com, do have a tremendous hedging program that we've got software for, and we've also got the education that goes with it to understand markets and how markets work, because options are a very valuable tool, and options can give you a great opportunity to take care of your portfolio. And we always want to make sure that you do that. And as I said, this show is being brought to you by Audible. Audible.com, and of course it's for you listeners, you can check out Audible. You know, they're offering a free download with a 30-day free trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I personally recommend Fed Up, of course, by our friend Danielle DiMartino Booth, and Creature from Jekyll Island, but also I'm right now in the middle of another Stuart Woods detective story with Stone Barrington, who's who I want to come back as when I grew up. But again, great stuff. And that's www.audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. Again, that's www.audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show for your free audiobook. In the meantime, that will do it for today. This is The Bubba Show, and I am Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we appreciate Kevin for coming on. I'm sure he'll come back again. How could he not want to hang out with me? In the meantime, we'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station, here on The Bubba Show at libertytalk.fm. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, coming right back to you tomorrow. Have a great day. Have a great weekend. A great Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.